Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the first episode of the Beyond the OPS Baseball Podcast. My name is Ethan and I will be your host for the show. Please follow me at OPS_baseball on X for more updates on more ideas and postings on when I will be able to post content on Spotify. I kind of just want to give a little bit of a rundown on the agenda for today. I want to highlight the three biggest moves in the offseason that just recently happened, do a pretty decent breakdown on those three, and then we'll also get into pretty much every move that has happened because the stove has been cooking. People have been looking for Jeff Passan's tweets, and there is a lot of baseball news to be had. But before we get into the show, I just want to thank a lot of the supporters that have been following me on X and giving me ideas and feedback on the podcast and just overall content that I will be posting. So before we get into it, I just want to say thank you for everyone that is listening right now. And like I said, if you are new, follow me at OPS_baseball for more updates. The first point I want to get into is obviously the big fish that was on the block. Juan Soto on Sunday agreed to sign a 15-year, $765 million contract, by far the largest contract in Major League Baseball history, which was finalized on Wednesday after a pending physical. To put into perspective how much money this is, he got more than Shohei Ohtani, the greatest baseball player we have ever seen, and I think his career earnings after this contract will be more than Tom Brady and LeBron James combined just in overall revenue for playing the sport. I've seen a lot of people talk about why this contract is a little bit, or even just frankly, an overpay, but I think a lot of people are missing the point. Will Juan Soto most likely be a DH going into his later 30s? Yes, but I think people are just missing the point. As a baseball owner, you pay these guys because at the end of the day, you want to win. When Juan Soto is on your baseball team, you're going to win. Just going into the first point, his plate discipline is pretty much unmatched like any player we have ever seen. I could probably go off the top of my head and maybe say Ted Williams, maybe a Barry Bonds or a Tony Gwynn are right there up with him. Juan Soto has a special ability to just read pitches out of the hand. He knows how pitchers are going to attack him. And I'm only 22 years old, and I know a lot of you guys probably listening are a little bit older, and I think you can agree with this point. I have never seen a player consistently just spit on pitches. You'll see Juan Soto get sliders, off-speed pitches, even fastballs, pitches that are in the zone for 80 to 85% of the time, and he is just able to lay off them with ease. He is such a tough at-bat. And regardless of how his playing career will go over this 15-year deal, he makes your team better. If you are, let's say, Francisco Alvarez or Brett Beatty, if Brett Beatty stays with the Mets, is hitting in the 8th or 9th spot, and Juan Soto is hitting in the 2 spot, you're already thinking about, as a pitcher, man, you know, I really got to get these guys out because Juan Soto is potentially going to be on deck in 2 hitters, and no one wants Juan Soto to come up with anyone on base. But let's just look into what makes Juan Soto special. Last year, in 157 games, 713 plate appearances, he hit 41 home runs, 288 batting average, 419 on base, 569 slugging, 421 wOBA, a 180 WRC plus with a 8.1 F4. And we saw what he did in the postseason. Frankly, the Yankees offense outside of Juan Soto and Aaron Judge last year was a huge struggle for the team, and I think we saw that in the playoffs. Judge had a pretty down playoff performance, to say it lightly, and pretty much Juan Soto, Gleyber Torres for the most part too, and especially Giancarlo Stanton pretty much carried this team. But let's see what he does in the playoffs. 160 career at-bats, 11 home runs, 30 RBIs, 281 average, 389 on base, 927 OPS. I know I'm not speaking just for myself. I couldn't think of one player in the postseason in this era or even just right now standing in baseball that I would rather want at the plate than Juan Soto. He is such a tough at-bat. You know he's not going to strike out. He's going to work deep counts. He's extremely cocky, and he knows how good he is. He just has an aura about him that is unthinkable and uncomparable in terms of modern day baseball. Even the last at bat against the Guardians, that home run that pretty much solidified the series, that was probably the best at bat I have ever seen of watching baseball for 16 years. Of just, he knew what was coming. No matter what you threw Soto on that at bat, maybe he doesn't hit a home run if you run that at bat back 10 times, but he's getting on base in that at bat 10 out of 10 times. You were not getting Juan Soto out, and I think everyone watching that at bat is like, man, you know what? I mean, he's gonna get on base no matter what. He ends up clobbering a home run and sealing the series for the Yankees, putting them over the edge and putting them into the World Series. I want to look at a couple of things on Juan Soto's advanced profiles. If you dig deeper into what Juan Soto did, pretty much a career year, compared to 2023 going into 2024, increase in exit velo, launch angle, barrel percentage, hard hit percentage, launch angle sweet spot percentage, expected batting average, expected WOBA, WOBA, expected slugging percentage, and yeah, somehow he decreased his K rate. His walk rate, pretty much the same. You know what you're getting, an elite walk rate, someone that's going to get on base at a 400 clip, 430 clip at times, going to be a league leader in on-base percentage, draws a ton of walks, just the power potential is absolutely insane. Probably still going to project 35 to 40 home runs playing in Queens next year. But pretty much just a career year for Juan Soto. The projected Mets lineup, this is without Pete Alonso. You're going to have Francisco Lindor, a easily top 10, top 15 player in terms of overall value, 30-30 player, provides some of the best defensive shortstop abilities in Major League Baseball, leading off. Juan Soto in the two spot. Mark Vientos, who I think can have a killer year, especially with those two guys in front of him, playing first. Brandon Nimmo in left field. Brandon Nimmo kind of had a streaky year last year, showed times where he was really good, but kind of a down year. But overall value, you're still looking at a 3-win player, potential 5-win player at his best. Starling Marte at DH. Jeff McNeil started to pick it up towards the second half. I'm still a Jeff McNeil believer, hitting in the sixth spot. Francisco Alvarez, one of the best young catchers in Major League Baseball. Brett Beatty, I know that they're looking to kind of move him, and there's been reports on the Mets wanting to move him and not moving him, so that's kind of still up in the air. Hitting in the eighth spot, and then Tyrone Taylor, I think, is a really good, almost second leadoff hitter, hitting in the ninth spot. So even without the Mets, if they don't get Pete Alonso, there's still a chance, but I don't want to say he's going to stay there. So this is just a lineup without Pete Alonso. Without Pete Alonso, that lineup, I think, is better than last year's Yankees. I understand you have Aaron Judge, but you have Lindor, you have Vientos, who I think could be a potential, I mean, we saw a breakout last year. He could be an unbelievable power option for the Mets at first base. Brandon Nimmo is really good. Marte is good. Jeff McNeil faltered a little bit last year, and we haven't really seen that like 330 batting average clip, but Jeff McNeil is still a very solid player. Francisco Alvarez, when healthy, easily 25 to 30 home runs. I think Brett Beatty is really good. I might be a little bit more optimistic than certain baseball fans and even certain Mets fans, but I think Brett Beatty is a pretty good option. I think he just needs playing time. I think Tyrone Taylor, good defensive outfielder, has some sneaky pop, and I think he's a very good option in center field. I know that the Mets also did get Jose Siri from the Rays. I don't know exactly if he'll have a starting role. I think he could probably be like a platoon slash bench, just defensive option center field, but maybe he could split time with Tyrone Taylor, or Tyrone Taylor switches to another outfield spot. But that's pretty much the projected lineup. I know that they, like I said, have Jose Siri, but I don't know how much of a starting role that he will have. But if he does, you could probably switch out Tyrone Taylor with Jose Siri. If you add Pete Alonso in that lineup, he's going to slot in third or fourth with Vientos behind him. Vientos with Alonso, if they have Vientos hitting either fourth or fifth with those guys in front of him, I mean, easily 100 RBIs and just ridiculous production. This is a interesting scenario I was thinking of last night when just taking notes and looking more into the Mets lineup. Imagine they sign Jock Peterson and they get Pete Alonso, or maybe they just don't get Alonso and they get Peterson. you're looking at Lindor, Soto, Vientos, Nimmo, Marte, McNeil, Francisco Alvarez, Brett Beatty, and then Jock Peterson. That lineup will absolutely bang. And like I said earlier, regardless of what we see from Soto, maybe he doesn't do what he did last year. Could he still do it? I mean, absolutely, the dude is unbelievable. But even if we don't see that insane 2024 right off the bat, everyone in this lineup is going to benefit from Soto. Like I said, I understand it's a lot of money for Juan Soto. I mean, dishing out the biggest contract in professional sports history. But I think people are overlooking that you pay a guy to win. Yes, you overpay for him, but imagine being an owner and looking back at it, you know, after the end of it, 15 years, and going, man, you know, I wish I would have just gotten Juan Soto. Yeah, you're paying him, what, $51 million a year, but he's going to help your team win. You pay a guy to win. Steve Cohen did that, and the Mets got their guy. Steve Cohen went into this, and Juan Soto and Scott Boras went to this. He's going to the highest offer. I think he probably used Toronto and Boston and maybe even the Yankees as a kind of leverage option to see how much he would get and to see how much Steve Cohen was going to give him. I mean, Steve Cohen probably would have paid $800 million for this guy because he is such a damn good baseball player. But yeah, Juan Soto to the Mets, huge for the overall lineup. Just big advanced profile increasements from last year. 8.1 F4, which is absolutely absurd. And like I said, the plate discipline is unmatched, automatically makes your team better. And in the postseason, I can't think of a guy you would rather have than Juan Soto. So transitioning into the next arm, pretty much, I know Evaldi signed, we'll get into him later, but pretty much the other big starting pitcher that was signed, Max Fried and the New York Yankees settled on an 8-year, $218 million contract, making him the largest guarantee in baseball history for a left-handed pitcher. And it's also the fourth largest contract for a starting pitcher in Major League Baseball history. Same thing with, I mean, no matter what, I think baseball fans are just, people are going to have different opinions. A lot of people are saying it's a risky deal with injury history. I get it. But we've seen guys like a Wheeler and other guys having kind of similar injuries and pretty much rebounding after that. I think Zach Wheeler had some sort of arm injury, was getting injured pretty often with the Mets, or I think even when he went to the Phillies, and that pretty much hasn't came up about again. And Zach Wheeler pretty much is your workhorse in MLB now. I can't think of another guy that's going to consistently eat innings as much as Zach Wheeler. He is just pretty much solidified himself as just overall value, probably the most valuable starting pitcher in Major League Baseball. But let's look at the projected rotation with Max Fried. Gerrit Cole, Max Fried, Carlos Rodon, your top three. Luis Gil, I know Luis Gil right now, there's been reports that the Astros, I mean, they're looking to get Kyle Tucker, the Yankees are. Luis Gil is linked as one of the trade pieces, so we'll see how that projects. But that's just as of recording on the 12th of December. Luis Gil is still projected in the rotation. And Clark Schmidt as a fifth option is absolutely ridiculous. Clark Schmidt is so nasty, such an underrated pitcher. And I think a lot of people started to pick up on him this year. And he was actually my Yankees breakout candidate along with Luis Gil last year in my predictions for the preseason. But what makes Max Fried so effective despite not being a flamethrower? I say this because, yes, Max Fried can get up to 98 miles an hour, but his four-seam last year was just a tick under 94. But what does he do really well? First of all, he is elite in limiting the ground, or he's elite in keeping the ball on the ground. Max Fried's ground ball percentage of 54.4% is fifth among all starting pitchers since the start of 2017, minimum of 800 innings pitched. His top ground ball percentages are going to be his four-seam at 53.3, 99th percentile. His sinker is in the 87th, changeup in the 90th, sweeper in the 90th, and slider in the 80th. Max Fried is able to just put the ball on the ground. He's a pitch-to-contact guy. Yeah, you can see games where he had a career high 12 Ks against the Red Sox last year. But Max Fried is a pitch-to-contact kind of guy, and he is pretty much just elite at keeping his pitch count low. He's going to, you know, pitch deeper into games, maybe in the seventh inning have around, you know, high 90s. I think he even had a complete game where he was in the 80 pitch range, which is absolutely unbelievable. So, yeah, you're going to add a guy potentially one healthy. He's going to eat more innings than most guys, and he's also going to be able to do it with less pitches. So, yeah, overall, he might be eating more innings, but if you look at a per pitch per inning value, he is extremely valuable in that asset. I want to go into the next point about Fried. He is elite at limiting weak contact with his deep arsenal. Since 2017, Max Fried has the lowest barrel percentage, lowest amount of barrels, second in hard hit percentage at 28.4, sixth in average exit velocity at 86.9 miles per hour, eighth in hard hits, 13th in soft percentage for contact of hits, and 14th in hard hit percentage. Max Fried, when he's on, is so utterly dominant. He does this with an elite seven-pitch mix. And I think this is just a very finesse, high-upside, non-flamethrower deal. He's able to limit his pitch count due to the high ground ball percentage and pitch-to-contact numbers. And the Yankees did a great job pivoting from Juan Soto. You miss out on Juan Soto. I know a lot of Yankees fans were upset about this, probably Brian Cashman as well as Steinbrenner, not getting their guy, but you pivot to Max Fried. Yeah, the injury history, but you also have to think he's not a guy that's going to throw with a lot of velo for the most part. Like I said, I know he gets up to 98, but he's going to average around, you know, high in the 93 range, like 93.6, 93.8 on his fastball pretty much every year. So the arm injury concern in terms of velocity, especially in today's age, is not a factor because he is a crafty pitch mix lefty that is able to just work around counts and at bats and has a good scouting report for what he's going to do for his plan of attack. So you're not getting that risk. And at the end of the day, same thing with Soto. The guys won a World Series. You pay a guy because you think that he is going to bring value to your ball club, and Max Fried certainly does that with the New York Yankees. Like I said, that projected rotation is absolutely insane. And I think the Yankees could also maybe get a Christian Walker. I know there was reports of a three-year low $60 million range contract, $20 million per year, which is absolutely unbelievable value for Christian Walker. I mean, you're looking at a guy that's going to be arguably in pretty much the best defensive first baseman in Major League Baseball. He's going to hit close to 30 home runs. I don't even want to project how many he would hit in Yankee Stadium, but bare minimum, the best defensive, arguably, first baseman in baseball. 25 to 30 home runs, 800 OPS, sometimes 240 to 260 average, but that would be an extremely valuable bat in that lineup with Jazz Chisholm, Aaron Judge, and maybe Gleyber Torres if the Yankees are able to keep him. I just want to cover one more recent transaction that happened in Major League Baseball before we go into more of an overview of all the signings, starting with Jorge Soler to the Los Angeles Angels. But the Boston Red Sox made a very, very good move. They acquired Garrett Crochet, and pretty much their starting rotation after that acquisition would be Garrett Crochet, Tanner Houck, Brian Bello, Lucas Giolito. I know he's coming off of an elbow injury, and then Cutter Crawford. That is a very, very good rotation, and especially with the Red Sox pretty much being a anti-fastball organization now, you got to wonder what they're going to do with Crochet. So, what do the White Sox get in return for Garrett Crochet? They're getting Kyle Teal, the number 25 overall prospect, Brandon Montgomery, Chase Meidroth, and Wilkerman Gonzalez. I want to highlight first Kyle Teal. Kyle Teal is one of my favorite, like, dynasty overall projected future catchers in Major League Baseball. Has a great defensive approach, plus power, and is just, I mean, amazing defensively. Kyle Teal is regarded in the industry and with a lot of baseball fans as one of the best catching prospects in Major League Baseball. Meidroth also is really good too. Reached a .437 on base clip in AAA last season. Has a really good zone contact rate and had an .887 OPS versus right-handed pitching. Not really the best against left-handed pitching at .714. But like I said, really good zone contact rate and a really good reverse splits guy, especially against right-handed pitchers. Montgomery, crazy pop and exit velos, And I know we saw in college before he got drafted of him just hosing guys, pretty much an 80 grade arm. So you're getting a really good athlete, especially showing it a little bit last year, but crazy athlete, especially when he came out of college. Good exit velos, crazy pop. I think that's a really good acquisition for the White Sox. And then Wilkerman Gonzalez, if you go and look at his film, especially in minor league ball and I think in low A, his stuff is absolutely insane. The movement on his pitches are crazy. And honestly, I think he could project to be a late inning relief pitcher, high leverage arm in the future with the White Sox. But I think this is a win-win for both trades. As much as you think the White Sox could have kept Garrett Crochet, the team lost 120 games last year. You're not really helping yourself by keeping Garrett Crochet and building around him. You're potentially getting a future star catcher, Brandon Montgomery, a really good outfielder with crazy pop, good arm. Meidroth has really good splits against righties. And Wilkerman Gonzalez, like I said, if you go look at his tapes and just his overall pitching performances, his stuff is really, really good. I think there's a lot of projected stuff plus values, and we'll see what the White Sox can do with that. But I think it's a win-win for both sides. You're obviously, the Red Sox are bolstering their starting rotation, which they needed from last year. I know that Cutter Crawford, Tanner Houck, guys like that had really, really good first halves. They kind of fall off towards the second half, so you're just bolstering your starting rotation. And I'm still a Brian Bayo believer. I think he's a really good right-handed pitcher. I think he's young, but he's more of a pitch to contact. I like the repertoire that he possesses. And then same thing with Lucas Giolito. I mean, you saw what the Red Sox did with their rotation last year and improving a lot of these guys. If Lucas Giolito comes back and is pretty healthy, I really want to see what the Red Sox can do with him. I think that is a very good rotation that I was already high on last year. You add Garrett Crochet, it makes it a lot better. But let's take a deeper dive into Crochet. 7.1 feet of extension is going to put him in the 93rd percentile. Basically, all of his pitches are going to have added potential velo and perceived velo for hitters because he is just so lanky and has a really good delivery to the plate. You would think with him being a big K guy that, you know, he would have a lot of outings where he's just walking a lot of guys. His 5.5% walk rate is in the 87th percentile, so you're getting a guy that has a 35.1% K rate, top 5, top 10 in Major League Baseball, also doesn't walk guys, 93rd percentile in whiff percentage, 93rd percentile in chase percentage at 33.5%. I mean, the package for Crochet is ridiculous. Doesn't walk, high strikeout rate, a lot of whiffs, a lot of chase, his fastball velo at 97.2 miles an hour, is going to be in the 92nd percentile, and even his expected numbers, xERA at 2.85 in the 90th, same thing with expected batting average in the 90th percentile. His fastball run value at 21 was top 10 in Major League Baseball, and his pitching run value overall in the 89th percentile, so, you know, top, you know, 15, 20, pretty much pitcher last year. Crochet in the first half of the season was primarily just being used as a starter, and then once he hit his innings pitch limit, he was in a weird bulk relief role. You'd see him go out there for three, sometimes four innings, but mainly three innings, but you'd see him rack up, I mean, 7 or 8 Ks. I think there was a game against the Braves. I think it was at Truist, and he had four or five strikeouts in a row. And you could see guys going back to the dugout, and they were just, I mean, mind blown. I mean, his stuff is absolutely insane, and I would love to see, especially with the Red Sox not being a fastball-heavy organization now, with the pitching coach that they did get from the Giants, but I really like the projected value for Crochet, and I think, I know Cassis is being talked about, and the Red Sox are looking to move guys, but they lost Tyler O'Neill. Obviously, Casas is really good. Willie Abreu, Sedan Rafaela, Rafi Big Scoops Devers. I mean, that is a, you know, solid lineup overall. I don't really think that they need too much offensive development or additions. I mean, they could definitely use maybe, you know, one pretty good big bat. But that rotation is really, really solid. You can maybe see him, you know, trying to pick up maybe like a Devin Williams or something like that. I know he's been, you know, linked to the Yankees or maybe even the Dodgers, but if you could get it, maybe a relief pitcher, maybe like one pretty decent bat with that rotation. The bullpen is a little shaky, but they have some pretty solid guys in there. I know that they have a lefty that I really like, but yeah, you bolster your rotation. The offense is already pretty good. I really like the addition of Garrett Crochet to the Red Sox. And I know they missed out on Max Fried. Obviously, they missed out on Juan Soto, but the potential value for Crochet is like best possible scenario, top five pitcher in baseball. I think worst case scenario, you're looking at like top 15 pitcher in baseball. I mean, this is a really good move. And for all we know, a lot of prospects don't pan out. The White Sox could have legitimately gotten a few prospects that won't pan out. I really like Teal, and I really like Montgomery. I pretty much like all these guys. But like I said, with prospects, you don't exactly know what you're getting until they are proven at the major league level. Crochet had glimpses of that when he got called up. I think they were in the playoff run in 2020 or 2021, and he pitched against the Reds. And you could just tell the guy was special. And then going into last year when they announced he was going to be starting, people were really like, whoa, I mean, this guy is freakishly legit, big power arm. So the Red Sox definitely know what they're getting with Crochet. Hopefully he's able to handle more of a starting pitching role with injuries, especially with velocity. You always got to hope arm injuries are going to be good on Crochet's side. But the White Sox, you don't exactly know what you're getting, but I really do like the potential of the guys that they got. So I think this is definitely a win-win on both sides. And there is a lot of stuff that is being talked about in the AL East with moves, and I think this is going to be a really good competitive division. I think the Red Sox were pretty close to competing last year, and actually in one of my YouTube videos, I talked about how the Red Sox were pretty much my sleeper surpriser team, especially the rotation, because I really liked the move of getting the guy from the Giants, the pitching coach. But yeah, they have a very solid ball club. Rotation's good. I like the moves, and I mean, maybe this team could try and slip into the playoffs, especially if, you know, obviously the offseason is a long time, still 3 more months of it left. But yeah, this is a really good move for the Red Sox, and I think this was a move that they needed to get, especially bolstering their starting rotation. So now that we got the three recent big ones, I just want to do kind of an overview and kind of, if you haven't been paying attention, pretty much all of the major trades or offseason acquirements or just reductions from each team. The first splash of the offseason, the Braves gave away Jorge Soler to the Angels for Griffin Canning. And I know that I don't think Canning is even on the Braves anymore, but I think this is a really good addition for the Angels, especially bolstering them in the power department. On November 3rd, the Royals re-signed Michael Wacha to a 3-year deal, $51 million, and it includes a club option. And he could pretty much max out, I think, at 4 years, $72 million. This is a great addition, and I know that they also lost Brady Singer. So Michael Wacha had a really good year last year, and I know he kind of had a renaissance with the Rays, went to the Padres, and was able to, I think, go to the Red Sox too. And he has definitely kind of regained his potential that he had with the St. Louis Cardinals. Kyle Hendricks was on an agreement with the deal, 1 year, $2.5 million with the Angels. The Angels, I mean, you don't really know what you're getting with Kyle Hendricks. I mean, the potential is still kind of there, but he's pretty much faltered the last few seasons. But the Angels are still out there. They always make moves, regardless of how you want to view their organization. You can't say that the Angels don't get out there and get their guys. I know they were in on Blake Snell and Corbin Burns. But yeah, they get Kyle Hendricks on a 1-year deal. Austin Hedges returned to the Guardians on a 1-year deal. Angels got Travis d'Arnaud. I really wish the Rays would have gotten him, but they got a guy that I actually projected them to get, and I'm very happy with that. But he did sign a 2-year, $12 million contract to kind of platoon with Logan Ohapi, kind of show him the roles, and I think this is a really good acquisition for them. The Red Sox did get Justin Wilson, 1-year, $2.25 million addition to bolster their bullpen, which is really good. I know we just kind of talked about Crochet and maybe them getting bullpen arms. I kind of wanted to highlight the guys that they already didn't get, like maybe like a Devin Williams. But yeah, they do get Justin Wilson. I really like this deal for the Red Sox. Angels did get Kevin Newman on a 1-year, $2.5 million contract. Nick Martinez actually accepted his qualifying offer with the Reds. And I honestly think this is a very smart decision. I don't really think that he was getting more than $21 million. And he stays with the Reds. He had a really good year last year. And I know a few of my mutuals on X, shout out to Discuss Baseball. And I have talked about Nick Martinez being on our radar for a long time. Mets get Jose Siri, which I think is a pretty good addition for them. He's not going to hit for high average at all. I think he had the lowest or one of the lowest qualifying averages in Major League Baseball, but you're getting a guy with, I think, 16 or 17 OAA, pretty much got robbed of a gold glove last year, but pretty good pop, 20 to maybe 25 home runs if you're really getting the absolute best with premier defense, pretty much a all or nothing kind of guy at the plate with premier defense. The Cubs did acquire Eli Morgan in a trade with the Guardians. Eli Morgan is a very solid arm for the Cubs to get. Anyone pretty much in the Guardians bullpen is elite. They had a historical bullpen last year. You get Eli Morgan, you're getting a very, very solid arm. The Royals traded Brady Singer to the Cincinnati Reds for Jonathan India and Joey Weimer. Definitely a interesting move. I think Singer was really good last year, and the Royals were kind of figuring out what worked for him. And I think he added a four-seam fastball, and it really played into more of his profile. And the Reds are pretty good at developing pitching. You saw that with Hunter Green. Trevor Bauer went over there and did really well. You know, they have some young guys that are really good. Nicola Dolo is an absolute beast. Andrew Abbott. And just a couple guys over there are really good young talented arms. I think the Reds could definitely develop Singer even more potentially than the Royals did. Jonathan India is going to be the new leadoff hitter for the Royals. I absolutely love this. A huge fan of Jonathan India's profile, and he has a really good walk rate to pretty much solidify himself as a premier leadoff hitter in Major League Baseball. Joey Weimer is pretty good. He played, I believe, with the Brewers last year. And he is a very good athlete in center field, makes really good catches, but his pop is, like, ridiculous. So this is a win-win for both. I think if the Reds do good at developing Singer more, I think this is a pretty good win trade for both, but definitely for the Reds. Yusei Kikuchi to the Angels. Like I said, the Angels, man, regardless of what you think of their organization, man, they make moves. 3 years, $63 million contract, has one of the best four-seam fastballs. The Astros really just kind of let him play into his profiles more and just let him be more comfortable. But I really like this move for the Angels. Another big one, I would have talked about it, but like I said, I wanted to just talk about the three, you know, recent ones. Blake Snell signed a five-year, $182 million contract with a lot of deferrals. The Dodgers rotation is going to be absolutely unbelievable. Blake Snell, you're getting one of the best K guys in Major League Baseball. It does have a high walk rate, but it doesn't matter. When Blake Snell is on, I will say this, when Blake Snell is on, he is the most dominant pitcher in Major League Baseball. I think he had a split in 2023 when he won the Cy Young, and it was like as dominant as Bob Gibson's stretch, where he was pretty much the best dominant stretch in Major League Baseball history. But Blake Snell goes to the Dodgers. Absolutely love this pickup for the Dodgers. You're getting one of the best premier arms in baseball to go along with guys like Glasnow, you know, Dustin May, Yamamoto, Shohei Ohtani pitching. I mean, it's going to be an unbelievable sight to watch there in Los Angeles. Right-hander Frankie Montas, the New York Mets, agreed on a two-year, $34 million contract, $17 million per year. This is a really good move for the Mets. Montas kind of found it with the Brewers, and I know that there's a lot of people that have, you know, posted threads and dove deep into his analytics. You can probably check them out on Twitter, but Montas, I think, is a really, really good move for the Mets. And especially the Mets with Steve Cohen, they're definitely more analytical than they've ever been. I think the Mets can really do some stuff with Frankie Montas. They did a lot of good with Shamania. Shamania was actually my breakout player, one of my breakouts for the Mets because of his underlying profiles that he had with the Giants the previous year, increasing the fastball velo. Having one of the best sweepers in Major League Baseball. But I really like this addition for the Mets, and I think they could do a lot in Montas' development. Matthew Boyd signed a 2-year, $29 million deal. Veteran lefty. He did pretty good with the Guardians last year. But you're getting him with Jamison Tyon, and just you got Steele over there too. I think that's is a pretty solid move. Red Sox get Aroldis Chapman, 1 year, $10.75 million. The dude's going to throw 104 miles an hour. Yeah, he has command issues, but I mean, at the absolute worst, you're still getting a premier flamethrower in Major League Baseball. It's going to have a high strikeout clip. And like I said, they're an anti-fastball organization now. You got to love to see what they're going to do with that slider. But like I said, if they could get like a Devin Williams or just another, maybe even if the Rays wanted to get rid of Pete Fairbanks or you know, a top club is looking to get rid of one of their top relief arms, I mean, that could be a dangerous bullpen with Chapman and Justin Williams or Justin Wilson, stuff like that. I think that's a very good signing for them. I think definitely the most surprising move, I don't think anyone had it on their radar or on their bingo card. Luis Severino and the A's agreed on a 3-year, $67 million contract, largest guarantee in the A's franchise history. I absolutely love the Mets getting Severino last year, kind of like a bounce back, see what the guy can do. And he pretty much shown that he's still really good in Major League Baseball. If the A's are able to spend money and just get a couple starting pitchers, a lot of people don't realize the A's offense last year was pretty good. And that's with a down year for Zach Geloff, which I think he could definitely rebound next year. But if they could grab maybe one more arm, I think that would be, I mean, fantastic. They could definitely be like a maybe sneaky over 500 team next year, and then maybe potentially the next year, like kind of like a wild card spot at the absolute best. But things are definitely trending right with the A's. I know that they have Jack Wilson's kid. He's going to be really good. I think Jake Wilson or Jack Wilson, one of the best coveted shortstop prospects in all of Major League Baseball. Lawrence Butler was absolutely unbelievable. You got to see what they do with Brent Rooker, but I really like this addition for the Oakland A's. I'll highlight this in a separate post because I want to separate kind of my Rays content from overall MLB content to kind of satisfy both parties, but I won't get into it too much. I'll save a separate podcast for this. But Danny Jansen and the Rays, 1 year, $8.5 million contract. He was my projected catcher that the Rays were going to get. I absolutely love this deal. Jansen, one of the best pitch blockers in Major League Baseball, premier pop. Like I said, I'll kind of save the details. I'll cover it in another podcast episode. But I couldn't be happier for the Rays to get Danny Jansen. They had one of the worst catching performances last year, and you bolster that catching, you know, spot. And at the absolute worst, it's still a huge upgrade over what they had last year. So I really like this signing for the Rays. The Mets get Clay Holmes, and not as a reliever. They're going to sign a 3-year, $38 million contract with an opt-out after the second year as a starter. Holmes has an elite ground ball rate. Yeah, you could mention all his blown saves and crap like that. I get that. But Clay Holmes is a very, very solid arm, and I think with a high ground ball rate and his pitch mix is kind of tuned more for a starter than a reliever. He's not going to be a high K guy. Like I said, low K guy, ground balls. And I think his repertoire and his overall arsenal and the way he attacks hitters is a lot better as a starting pitcher than a reliever. The wall in Baltimore is getting closer, and they are getting Tyler O'Neill on a 3-year, $49.5 million contract. If you go look at his productions with Anthony Santanderas over the last couple of years, it's really similar. And I think last year they had close to the same F4, or it's, I think, in the last 2 years, same F4. But anyways, this is a really good move for the O's. Adley Rutschman, Gunnar Henderson, Colton Cowser, potentially Jackson Holliday. I mean, that is a very solid addition to have like a veteran presence, veteran power bat that the O's definitely could use. I really like this move. The Giants signed Willy Adames on a 7-year, $182 million deal. The left side of the infield with Matt Chapman and Willy Adames, and I know that they're even interested in Ha-Sung Kim, that might be the best defensive infield, I mean, we have seen in, I mean, a long time in Major League Baseball. Willy Adames, I understand it's not a hitter-friendly park, but Matt Chapman kind of had a renaissance again after he left the Blue Jays after a down year in his final year. So yeah, you're getting Willy Adames. kind of maybe an overpay, but I think still you're getting premier defense, 30 home runs. I think he had 100 RBI, pretty much career year across the board. This is a very good addition for the Giants, especially a guy that they need at shortstop. And I think Willie is more than willing to move to a different position if they want to get Ha-Seom Kim. So this is a really good move for the Giants. Michael Conforto, one-year deal with the Dodgers, $17 million. Yeah, you miss out on Juan Soto. Do the Dodgers, I mean, yeah, they could have definitely used Juan Soto. But Michael Conforto, very solid in-zone contact rate guy. Very good barrel percentage, hard hit percentage, contact profiles. And this is a really good, I mean, it's the Dodgers. The Dodgers are so good at player development, along with like the Rays, the Guardians, now the Mets. But there's a lot of these teams that are really good with data analytics. And I think Michael Conforto could have a huge year with the Dodgers. I really like this deal. Obviously, the Mets get Juan Soto. We already talked about 15 years, $765 million. The Phillies get Jordan Romano. This is a fantastic move. I understand Romano had a really down year last year, but there was a lot of injuries. Romano has some of the nastiest stuff in Major League Baseball. Elite slider, elite four-seam fastball. I know that they have Orion Kerkering, and they were kind of tweaking with him. Maybe he's like the setup guy. I know that Jeff Hoffman is rumored to potentially stay with the club. I'm not going to report or anything like that, but there are talks about him potentially being interested in a starter with other teams, but I think the Phillies are probably going to try and keep him because he is, I mean, ridiculous. Like I said, with my Mania pick, I had Jeff Hoffman on my YouTube channel as one of the premier relief pitchers in Major League Baseball that no one talked about last year. And we saw, again, this year, people started to really pick up on him, and there's a lot of interest in him being a starter. Romano definitely bolsters out that bullpen, and I think at the absolute worst, I mean, 30 saves with like a below 3 ERA, he's still a really good arm, and a lot of people, I think, will look back at this pickup and be like, wow, that was a really good grab for the Phillies. Yimi Garcia, really like this move for the Blue Jays, 2-year, $15 million. I can't really say enough about it. I think that Yimi was a very underrated pitch metric guy, and with a couple of tweaks, I think he could be a phenomenal arm for the Toronto Blue Jays. I really like this move. We already covered it. Max Fried, 8-year, $218 million deal. This one was really, really weird. The Blue Jays get Andrés Giménez from the Guardians, and then Spencer Horwitz was supposed to be with the Guardians. Then they gave him to the Pirates. Spencer Horwitz was one of my top, because, I mean, obviously I projected him with the Blue Jays, because, I mean, how do you know he's going to get traded or not? But he was my projected, like, big impact guy with the Blue Jays. Really high WRC+. I think it was over 125. Really good just contact results. Really good plate approach. Very mature hitter, works counts. But I get Andrés Giménez is really good defensively. His overall offensive prowess the last few years is from an outlier season. I mean, maybe they did that because they're going to get an outfielder. I know maybe Teoscar Hernandez, who knows what they're going to try and get, but maybe they get an outfielder. You know, maybe they try and make a trade for Cody Bellinger if they even have the prospect or the player capital to try and even make a trade with him. But yeah, definitely a confusing deal. Andrés Giménez to the Toronto Blue Jays. I know that the Guardians got some very good guys in return. So I think it's a win for a lot of teams, but it's definitely, if Giménez is able to bounce back offensively, I think it's a really good move for the Blue Jays. I think if he has like a 98 or 100 WRC plus, he's still like a, you know, 4-1 player with how good he is defensively. But yeah, Andrés Giménez to the Toronto Blue Jays. Nathan Eovaldi goes back to the Rangers. I absolutely love this. Pair him with Kumar Rocker, Max Scherzer, Jacob deGrom coming back. 3 years, $75 million contract. He got paid. I think he absolutely deserves it. Nathan Eovaldi, when healthy, is just a workhorse, dominant arm. And we saw that in the 2023 playoffs where they won a world championship. The dude shows up in big moments. He did it with the Red Sox. He did it with the Rangers. I think he's just a great fit there in Texas. I absolutely love this move. Another weird move that happened 2 days ago on December 10th. Jake Berger is going to the Rangers, and the Marlins didn't, I don't even think they received a top 10 or 15 prospect. There's no defensive value with Jake Berger. You know what you're getting. I think he's hit like 60 plus home runs the last 2 years with like a 900 OPS. Pretty much premier power. I think it was 2022. He had like the highest at-bat per home run rate or highest plate appearance per home run rate in Major League Baseball or highest exit velocity per plate appearance in Major League Baseball. So premier potential power for Jake Berger. I'm not really too big on some of the guys that they got, that the Marlins got. But we'll kind of have to wait and see. Peter Bendix was really good track record with the Rays at developing guys and just acquiring just raw talent for player development personnel to try and bolster their overall profiles and repertoires, especially with starting pitchers. Obviously, Garrett Crochet that we just talked about, and Jonathan Loaisiga to the Yankees. Yes, he gets hurt, but his overall just stuff profiles and the way his pitches move are just absolutely incredible. I think Loaisiga is just a Yankee at the end of the day. I know the Mets were interested in him too, but they obviously didn't get him. But Loaisiga just feels like a Yankee. He's going back to New York. And yeah, I mean, those are pretty much all of the big moves that have been covered. My next episode, I definitely want to focus on the Rays and the Danny Jansen move, which I really like. Like I said, follow me at OPS_baseball on X, and I really sincerely appreciate all of you guys for listening. I'm really glad that I have somewhat of a voice on social media to talk about baseball, and this is something that, especially with the school semester kind of winding down, I really want to start pumping out podcasts and more content. But really, I really, really, really appreciate you guys for listening, and I'll see you in the next one.